Ruhi Lee was born in India and raised in Australia. And growing up for her involved straddling two cultures. In one of them, being born female meant you were expected to be a good Indian daughter. But what did this entail? And if it didn't work out for you, where might that lead you? Ruhi's memoir is called Good Indian Daughter, How I Found Freedom in Being a Disappointment. Ruhi, welcome to Life Matters.
Hi, Hilary. Thanks for having me.
I'm really glad we could talk today. We'll get to the disappointment bit later because that is huge. But let's start at the start first. What do you need to be to uphold this ideal of a good Indian daughter?
So my experience of being a good Indian daughter, and I don't speak for all Indian daughters, though I know many South Asian peers and readers relate, but for me it meant being submissive, obedient and conforming to my parents' expectations of me. It meant letting them make all the decisions for me, respecting my elders without expecting that respect in return, and being conditioned to view unending sacrifice, self-sacrifice as a virtue. So all that meant was making other people happy. And the list goes on, but it basically meant putting myself last.
You talk in your podcast too about how your mum showed her love in acts of service, which is something that many women can relate to across the board, I think. But it sounds like it was, as you say, really one-sided. But, I mean, it also sounds like with your mum, she did a lot of shouting as well.
My mum is very loud. She was saying, it is an endearing quality as well. It was pretty funny growing up with her.
It sounds like too that your parents were a bit trapped in these gendered expectations around roles, weren't they? It sounds like your dad really liked cooking but didn't get to do much of it, and it was the opposite for your mum.
Yeah, so I think there was a really strong sense of shame around deviating from those gender roles. Women were in the kitchen, they did all the cooking, they looked after the children, and men worked outside, and it's not that different from other cultures. But it's interesting that even after moving away from India, they still tightly held to those ideals. And so my dad stuck with doing work outside, like lawn mowing and fixing things. And yeah, my mum did all of the cooking, even though she hated it. And even though my dad loved it, they rarely swapped over unless they really needed to. Although I have to say, as I got older, I would see my dad in the kitchen pretty often, and he'd be sort of the sous chef, but my mum was still in charge.
And then there would be the times when your mum went away and your dad would slip into making the food proper and not just chopping up the veg.
Yeah, and it was delicious.
Ruhi, you write in the book about how women were seen as having the onus of preserving the family's honour. Could you tell us how that works?
Yeah, I'm not sure how it started, but certainly for myself, my cousins, my aunties, even my grandmothers, somehow the blame falls on us for if the family honour is somehow tarnished. For example, like I talk about in the book, if a woman is sexually abused or sexually assaulted, the victim blaming happens straight away. Like, what was she wearing? Why was she out late at night? And if a woman stuffs up, for example, like as a young woman, coming home late or coming home with bad grades, like if your family reputation is on the line, but if a young man does the same thing, it's just written off as youthful foolishness, which is really frustrating.
Yeah. Well, when did you realise that all these expectations around good Indian womanhood were going to be a struggle for you?
It was just my reality from the get-go. And I couldn't actually see that until I was probably in my 20s. Like, as a teenager, I was pushing back on what my parents wanted or didn't want me to do, and I would argue with them about the things that I wanted against their will. But I couldn't really see it for what it was until I was in my 20s, and I was reading books on parenting and feminism and listening to podcasts. And it was interesting because I listened to your interview with Catherine Heyman, and she talked about the power of naming things and being able to see it as outside of yourself and being able to identify something and it becomes smaller. And I think that's sort of what happened through that process of reading for me, and being able to name, like being able to see emotional abuse for what it was, or gaslighting for what it was. And I think that really helped, just being able to put words to my experiences rather than, you know, it being this thing that I, this huge thing that I kept fighting against and banging my head against, that I couldn't really identify for all the bits and pieces that sort of fed into it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It really does. Oh, I found it really interesting too, reading about how you were, you know, you're trying to find your own identity, as everyone does growing up. You're trying to find your identity as a daughter of migrant parents in an Australian society that was still like, hey, we all eat Vegemite. And you're trying to externalise these things that are going on at home. How was that for you, kind of being in these two or many different worlds and trying to integrate a personality? An identity, really, I guess.
Yeah, really tough. And a real shame now that I'm older and I look back and I can, as far as I've read and as far as I know, seeing Australian history for what it is now and realising that, you know, Vegemite isn't everything, or, you know, white Australian culture, you know, isn't what was always here. But, you know, when I was in primary school, that was the norm, that was the culture to sort of like work your way into and assimilate to. So, it was really difficult because we weren't living in India and, you know, we were in Melbourne, and yet my household was like almost a household plucked out of India and planted here. And so my parents didn't, they would send me to school with like chapati and palle, which is like, you know, vegetables and spices in a flatbread. And my friends would think, like, they'd be like, oh, I call them friends, but, you know, my classmates, yep. Real friends don't do that. But they'd be like, oh, that's disgusting. Like, what does that smell? And it was horrible because I loved that food, but I was ashamed of it. And the same goes for so many other aspects of my identity at school.
Yeah, and people are opening a jar of Vegemite and going, yum, that's pretty strange when you look back.
Yeah.
Ruhi Lee, this book is called Good Indian Daughter, How I Found Freedom in Being a Disappointment. I really would like to hear about what it was like having to front up to your parents and say, in the context of, you know, strong pressure to marry at a certain age and to marry a certain person, hello, I've fallen in love with a Caucasian boy.
It wasn't pretty. I told them about 2 months after we started dating because I just wanted to be honest with them. And, yeah, it didn't go well. They eventually said, you have to break up with him. We'll think about this when you finish your studies. And I was like, but I actually love him. This is not just a fling. It's not casual dating. You know, we're really close, we're really serious. And you know, for readers who have read the book will know that my parents went through something similar themselves. Like, they, my dad's Lingayat and my mum's Christian, and for them to be together was just, it just blew up in India. Like, they weren't allowed to be together. So I was like, oh, you're so hypocritical. But, you know, in the end, like, they said to me, it's not that he's Australian, we just don't want you to have a boyfriend at all until, you know, you're at marriageable age. So anyways, I kept dating him and hiding him from them. And they eventually found out. But by that point, I think I was bold enough to say, this is what I'm doing. You can either accept it or I'm just going to move out and do my own thing. And I think that really worried them because, yeah, moving out of home before marriage or for reasons unrelated to employment is a big no-no for many South Asian daughters.
Well, and you write really powerfully about how those expectations shaped your career path early on and your educational involvement and where it led you, and the struggle to kind of break free of that and work out what you wanted to do and whether you could do that. But people are going to have to read the book for that, because I want to talk about the moment you realised that you were pregnant with a girl, and you turned to your husband and you said, "I just don't know I can be as good a mum to a girl as I could to a boy." What was behind that, Ruhi?
So at the time, I didn't know what was behind it. I thought it was just, I don't know, just a really harmless sort of gender preference, which, you know, now I know is harmful. But, you know, I didn't think much of it. And then as time went by, it sort of became all consuming. And all I could think about was how I'm going to ruin this little girl's life. And perhaps that wouldn't be the case if it was a son. And I think I just had this naive belief that if sons would be easier. And, you know, over time, again, through reading about this, I learned that it actually had nothing to do with her gender and everything to do with what I had been conditioned to believe growing up about women, their place in society, myself as a woman in this world. And, you know, learning that, you know, I was too emotional and too complex for my parents, and I needed more than they could give me, and that was because I was a girl, which is just not true. But that is what I thought. And so I was worried that being her primary role model meant that I would end up setting a really bad example, because my self-esteem wasn't great either. So I was just worried that she would really struggle because of me. And eventually I was able to work through that, and thank goodness for therapy.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, that's what it was, yeah.
And how do you deal with that now, Ruhi, now that you're raising your daughter, trying to keep the things that you value about your heritage without the crap in a society that, like you say, you know, has devalued a lot of the things that migrants bring?
It's certainly not a linear path. Like I'm still navigating it, to be honest, and I don't have a concrete answer, but I'm trying to. There are parts of my heritage that are really beautiful and important, and things that I'd like her to take with her into adulthood if she wants to. But, you know, things like the emphasis on family, but the way I'm trying to turn that around in our life is that it's not just about role-playing happy families. Like, you know, family is wonderful and important if you get along with your family, but I think it's more important to have authentic relationships where you can be vulnerable than family just for the sake of it, like always going to these big gatherings and hanging out, but where the relationships are superficial. And so, you know, that's a big deal. And I'm trying to help her connect to her heritage through food. Like, we'll cook Indian food pretty often at home, and as well as music. She loves Indian music and loves dancing to it. So I'm always looking for ways to help her connect to that. So, but I'll probably have more answers when she's a teenager or, you know, an adolescent. But it's tricky. Like, it's tricky trying to work it out. And luckily I have a partner who really supports that.
Well, there might be another installment of the Good Indian Daughter franchise from you, Ruhi Lee, at some point. Just quickly and finally, you write about, you know, finding freedom in being a disappointment. That is a difficult thing, though, to be. How do you cope with that being the effect of your freedom?
Therapy.
Good answer.
I guess it helps that ultimately I know that I'm living a life that is not disappointing to me, even if I've disappointed everybody else. And I think that's come with developing my self-esteem and self-confidence over time, and, you know, realizing that I matter. And at the end of the day, like, I only have myself to answer to. So, you know, I in my as sad as it is to think about, like one day my parents aren't going to be around, and I only have myself to blame if I don't follow my own dreams and my own desires. And knowing that I'm satisfied with my life as it's shaping out at the moment, it gives me comfort, you know, even though I know I've let a lot of other people down in the process, and I'm upholding my values, and that's what matters. And my daughter can see me doing that, and that's the legacy I'll leave behind. So that is what enables me to keep being a disappointment.
Really, it's a really brave book. It's a really powerful book. Thanks so much for telling us a bit about it today on Life Matters.
Thanks, Hilary.
Ruhi Lee is the author of Good Indian Daughter and the co-host of a podcast called Young, Brown and Not Entirely Free with her friend Zam. It's really worth a listen.